Chapter 7, Hitchhiking. After I was asked to leave home, Dad let me stay for one more week till we graduated, and that's really the last big date Bonnie and I had. We graduated together, and along with about 15 other kids, spent the night at the Wilsons' beautiful home on Lake Bemidji, and drove down to Lake Itasca the next day. After that weekend, along with a few other guys, we set out hitchhiking down to Le Sueur, Minnesota, which is maybe 50 miles below Minneapolis. There is a Green Giant company owns that town. We went down there looking for work, and they told us it was going about, we were early, probably about 3 or 4 days early, so they wouldn't be hiring. So we went, we hitchhiked back up to a town called Belle Plaine, about 25 miles away maybe, and there was a beer joint there that was home of the Nickel Tap. And I mean, they were their 12-ounce glass beer glasses for a nickel. So we were all teenage guys, but they let us drink there, and then we got loaded. And that sun went down, and we went looking for a place to sleep. We wandered all the way around down there, and we finally found a barn. And I think there was about four of us. We creep into that barn and try to get up in the loft, and the dog caught us, barked, and set up a storm. Next thing we know, we got a farmer down below with a shotgun ordering us off his property. So we went back where we came from originally. We're trying to sleep in a ditch, but the mosquitoes were so bad they drove us over to the barn. I tried to sleep again in that ditch with all those mosquitoes. I just couldn't stand it. I got up and I hitchhiked back to Bemidji. Well, you know, we're talking about 250 miles or so. It was midday, I think, when I got there. And I went over to where Bonnie worked over at Grinnell's. It was a car dealership place. And she came out and talked to me for a while and then had to get back to work. Then I turned around and hitchhiked back down to Le Sueur. And somehow we killed a couple of days in there and got hired. We worked, they put us to work in out on a pea viner. It was these contraptions out in the middle of a field that you take the pea vines and throw them on these belts, and the belt would take it up and then drop everything into this huge vat of the rubber with rubber baffles on it that would beat the peas out of it. And the peas would drop through holes down into boxes below. And the rest of the vine and all the pea pods and it also would go further up the chain and dropped off into a big pile where they had a tractor up there moving it around, keeping it level. Well, it didn't take long to find out that we weren't very well suited for that. We were all 18-year-old, 19-year-old kids, and we were in pretty good shape. But boy, those pea vines, when they cut a field of peas, they cut the whole damn field. So we were out there, you know, from 6 in the morning, sometimes to 10, 11, 12 at night, because after you managed to get all those peas processed, then you had to clean the machines before they take you back home in a bus. And after about 15 minutes of trying to pitchfork those pea vines onto a belt, my hands would cramp up. They just, you know, every few pitches I'd have to pry my hands open again and then put them on the pitchfork handle and they cramp right up. But after about a week, maybe 2 weeks out there on that, they told us that we were being fired. But actually they took us into and gave us jobs in the canning factory. They brought in a whole bunch of blacks that could only speak French, so I think they're from Haiti, you know. And they, all I could hear them say is, "Hi Joe, what do you know?" Something like that. And the rest was in French. And they did. They beat the hell out of us. They were a lot better than we were doing field labor work. In the factory, I had a much called a retort, on a, what they call a shift and a half. It's where the peas are actually cooked, and they're big pressure cookers, and very big steel vats that they put in all these pecans, in one other part of the plant. Then they're rolled over on these dollies where we were, and we'd hook them up and on a hydraulic hook and lift them up and swing them over under these big pressure cookers, and we could put, I think it was three or four of those huge vats in a pressure cooker, close the cooker and turn the lever on it, and then they would, down below, there was an open area down in the center of this place, and they would turn on the heat, steam them down there. The temperature in there usually ran about 130 to 140 degrees where we worked. Of course, we were all stripped of the waste. This shift and a half was that we worked 10 hours one day, 17 hours the next, and 23 hours the next. You got 20 minutes off of every hour. So you worked 40 minutes, you got 20 minutes off, and a lot of time was spent dashing outdoors, flopping on the ground, getting about 10, 15 minutes sleep, and somebody would kick you in the ribs, and time to go back in your shift. It was time to get back on your shift. And it was pretty exhausting work. They were almost shorthand. They brought in one old stumble bump from off the street. He wasn't there very long before he fainted, and he fainted on top of one of those pressure cookers. So, and they were nasty things. They're, you know, high. Some smart asses sometimes would open the valve. There's three valves, I think. They closed the top of that thing, and you try to open the valve that shot the steam into the wall. So once in a while, they'd open up one and shot it straight at you, just to make sure you're awake, you know. Anyway, we did some liberal drinking there downtown Le Sueur, and one night, must have been payday or something, I think we closed a bar down there, and it was about eight of us, Bemidji guys, walking along, and it was a little nippy. I remember one guy, we were trying to hide the drinks that we hadn't finished yet and everything. One guy hit it under, he took a glass and stuck it under his jacket, and as we were crossing a side street, the glass slipped and smashed on the pavement, and before he could say boo, there was two squads of cop cars there, right at the curb, and they came pouring out of there, and split us up and put four guys in one and four guys in the other squad car, and as they put you in, they gave you a real sharp smack in the kidney with a billy club. That smarted. They took the car I was in, went back to the bunkhouse, which was about a mile from the plant, and the other four disappeared. We found out the next day that they were taken into the jail, and first thing in the morning they went before a judge. The judge called them a menace to society, something, in that county, and banned them from the county. So my good friend Dick Carr was one of those that got banned, and he knew a girl up in Minneapolis, so he went up there and he gave me the phone number. Well, after the pea season ended, which didn't last too long, they told us it'd be another 3 weeks before the corn started. Well, that's a lot of time to kick around, you know. So I called Dick in Minneapolis and said, hey, you want to go hitchhiking to the West Coast? He says, yeah. So I think we both had about $20 or something. And we hitchhiked, you know, all through Minnesota, North Dakota, Montana, Idaho, Washington, Oregon. Somewhere along in there, we're riding along somewhere near Tacoma, I think, and this guy gave us a ride in a rickety old car, and the steering was terrible. It was just all over the highway with it, and of course the highway patrolman stopped him, and he didn't give him a ticket. He says, you're following me, right? Then we went right down to the judge, stood there in the courtroom, and the judge says, who's those other two guys? And I said, well, we're just hitchhikers. He told the cop, he says, take them to the city line. So they didn't even want us hanging around town. They took us right to the city line and watched us try to hitchhike to another town. Coming back, we got to Walla Walla, Washington, and it was just really, we were just exhausted. And we got dropped off near the Walla Walla, Washington City dump, I remember. So we went into the dump and found a place that wasn't too bad and stretched out, and it was cold. Dick had an extra light jacket he lent to me, and I put that on. And we both lit up and we were smoking. Next thing I know, I wake up in the morning and I look down and here's the butt of that cigarette sticking out of his jacket. And it had burned all the way through his jacket and two or three shirts that I had on, and I had a blister on my chest and I never woke up. I mean, to tell you, that's tired. Later on that, we got up to Spokane, and it's 9 o'clock at night, and we're out by a big signboard on the highway on the east end of Spokane. Not much out there. One fancy motel on one side and one mom and pop place on the other. And we try to huddle under that signboard. The wind was howling up there, and it was just too cold. So we walked back to the mom and pop place and knocked on the door there, and an old lady came to the window, elderly lady came to the door, and we explained that we needed a room for the night and how much were they, and she says $5, and and gave us the key to number five, let's say, and she says, and I'll be down in about 20 minutes. So we went in there and we got cleaned up, and next thing there's a knock on the door, and here came, her name was Mrs. Brown. This is Brown's Motel. And she says, here, and she handed us a platter of fried egg sandwiches and gave us our $5 back that we paid for. You talk about a nice person. And the next morning we went in, she gave us breakfast and let me use the phone to call home and tell mom and dad where I was, and I was heading back. You know, I always meant, you know, one of those, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. I always meant to write Mrs. Brown and tell her what a wonderful person she was for that, and never did. Later on, we were in Idaho in having a hard time getting out of this one town, and a sheriff's deputy pulled up. He said, where are you boys going? I said, well, Minnesota. He said, well, I can take you a ways up here. He says, there's an accident up in the hills, up in the mountains, that I got to investigate. Why don't you come on along? We'll see if we can get you a ride. So we got up there, and some guy, it was a two-lane highway, cut right out of a solid rock out of this mountain, so it was a narrow defile. And he tried to pass this big 16-wheeler going up the incline there, and another car came down at him, and he had to squeeze over, and the front bumper of this 16-wheeler completely peeled off the right-hand side of that car, took the car doors off and everything, you know. Didn't hurt anybody too bad, I guess, but it was a pretty bad mess. And so when the deputy got through adjudicating it, he said to this truck driver, he says, how about giving these boys a lift? And the guy says, oh, I'm sorry, I can't do it. It's against company policy. He says, so the deputy says, well, I guess we could go back down to whatever town we were, about 20 miles away, and work on this accident problem some more. And the guy says, hop in, boys. We got to get rolling. So that was a big help. And later on, and we're somewhere in Montana, and a Minnesota car rolled by us and didn't stop. And then along came another sheriff's deputy. He stopped. And, you know, they always ask you where you're going and everything. And he says, hey, he said, I saw a Minnesota car not too long ago. I said, well, we saw it too, but he didn't stop. He says, he'll stop. Let's pile in. So he put, and he tore up the road. And then he flashed that guy to pull him over when he caught up with a Minnesota guy. He says, give these boys a ride for Pete's sake. The guy says, okay, but I ain't feeding them. We didn't care about that. We just wanted to ride. We were lucky to get home there. Okay. Later on, one time I was hitchhiking home from college in Carlton, I think. It was a dead of winter. It must have been close to Christmas. And I was in Cass Lake, about 15 miles east of Bemidji. I only about 15 miles more to go and couldn't get out of there. It was just, and the snow was all piled up and snowing all around there. I was standing near a bar near the end of town, and there was a car parked there, and the two bodies pop up in there all of a sudden. And then they start up the car and they pull up next to me and say, you going to Bemidji? And I said, yeah, hop in. I hopped in. That was the damnedest ride of my life. Those guys were so drunk, it was unbelievable. And we just skated all the way to Bemidji, you know, bumping into snowdrifts and stuff. We finally got to the edge of town. I see there's a motel with a light on. I said, stop right here. This is where I live. You live here? Yeah, I live here. Let me out. And I got out and rang the doorbell of the, and the owner of the motel came to the door and I says, can I use your phone, please? I can call a cab. And I explained my plight. He says, yeah, get in here. I was hitchhiking back to school from Bemidji down to Minneapolis, I think, and I caught a ride with an old farmer in an old pickup truck, and we come down around this big bend, and we're heading around this bend, and all of a sudden, here's a whole herd of hogs coming across that highway, and he slammed on the brakes, and we swerved around, everything came right up next to a couple of pigs before it stopped, but there must have been 20, 30 deep in there. We'd have rolled for sure.